This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
Love Lies Bleeding is a fun and weird erotic thriller, and it seems almost programmed to appeal to a specific kind of audience. It's set in the 80s and stars Kristen Stewart as a brooding gym manager who falls in love with a hitchhiking bodybuilder. Bodies are ripped both figuratively and literally. The film's got a killer electronic soundtrack and cinematic references of everything from John Waters to Showgirls. I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Love Lies Bleeding on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me today is Jordan Cruciola. She is a writer and producer and the host of the podcast Feeling Seen on Maximum Fun. Hey, Jordan.
Hello. Thank you for having me today.
Also with us is Switched On Pop producer Rihanna Cruz. Hey, Rihanna.
Howdy. Happy to be here.
So, Love Lies Bleeding. What a movie. It's the year 1989, and Kristen Stewart plays Lou, a surly, withdrawn gym manager living in New Mexico. Lou falls hard for Jackie, an ambitious bodybuilder who drifts through town on her way to Las Vegas for a big-time competition. She's played by Katie O'Brien, who you might recognize from the Star Wars series The Mandalorian. Now, Lou and Jackie have a whirlwind romance, but it spins out of control when it collides with Lou's shady family. Dave Franco plays her dirtbag brother-in-law, JJ, probably a little bit too well, maybe? I don't know. And Ed Harris, in one of the grodiest wigs I have ever seen, plays her sinister dad, Lou Sr., a repulsive gun club owner. The film was directed by Rose Glass. She previously made the acclaimed horror feature Saint Maud. Love Lies Bleeding is in theaters now. So, Jordan, I'm going to kick it off with you. This movie actually does feel like sort of algorithmically programmed for you in particular, just knowing your taste. So, like,
yes.
How did you feel about this?
The trailer gave me such high hopes for this movie, obviously. And then the poster, which is just a ripped and slightly oiled photo of Katie O'Brien's muscly body holding a gun. I'm almost surprised to say that it delivered exactly how I needed to, because the way it ended up delivering was a surprise to even me. I was like, okay, I didn't see some of these elements being incorporated into this movie. And I'm so happy you characterized it as an erotic thriller, because I haven't been doing that when I've been talking to people about it. And it absolutely is. This is an erotic crime thriller in an economically depressed border town.
Yeah.
With Kristen Stewart in her most method hair this side of Joan Jett.
Erotic thriller to me, I mentioned Showgirls earlier, and it does kind of have that vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And there have been some movies that have come out in the last couple of years that people have tried to categorize as that. And I'm like, no. Like, I think this is what we're talking about when we talk about that. But maybe, it just seems like this is what I at least have been craving for some time, and some of us have been craving, and it's nice to see.
Guys, this movie is as thirsty and gay as if you were hoping it would be that. It is that.
Thirsty in a dry climate. Yes. That is what it is. Rihanna, how about you?
No, I'm happy you used the term erotic thriller, and I'm happy you mentioned like Showgirls and like John Waters movies, because I do feel like there was an element of camp to this movie that I really appreciated, and I loved it. I thought it was exciting. I thought it was pulpy. I love when a movie like doesn't hesitate to go there.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Being as vague as possible, the movie goes there a couple of times while also being one of the sexiest movies I've ever seen. It's hard not to feel like the absolute sweat dripping off of every frame in this movie, whether it's sweat from sex, whether it's sweat from anxiety.
You can smell absolutely everyone in this movie.
Yes.
And I love that you could smell the mustiness, you could smell the tanning oil, you can smell, you know, the hairspray in the back of the bodybuilding. You know what I mean? Like, it's all there. And I love when a movie does that. And I appreciate the way that this movie works, I think, to capture such a scene, you know, both in New Mexico and you know, in the specific situations that the characters are in, without going too far into it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you referenced that, the tactile tightness of this film was something I kept putting my notes down. Like every time a needle is stuck into a mm-hmm. body part, it's like a close up. This is not a movie for anyone who does not like needles.
No,
does not like body horror.
Yeah.
They are drawing some very clear parallels here from like the bodybuilding world and this idea of in the 80s of like this perfect mm-hmm. body, sculpted body, mm-hmm. and then also the inherent grossness of the human body, mm-hmm. just generally speaking.
Totally.
Like the first scene that we see Lou in is Lou like hunched over a toilet bowl with her hands like inside the toilet bowl trying to unclog it from all the things you never want to ever actually look at yeah. that would go into a toilet.
The truly manual unclogging is happening with a long glove on.
It's just like a movie that is both felt and seen. And yeah. like you both, like I was really into it. I avoided the trailer and I missed it when it premiered at Sundance earlier this year. But I had heard about it and all I heard was like Kristen Stewart bodybuilding movie. And I was like, okay.
Right, like I'm in.
Sure.
Yeah, you add in the word lesbian to that and that's what I heard over and over. Yeah.
This movie also, to me, it kind of brought up Greg Araki's films, including like The Living End. Like it felt very sort of like anarchic in a way. There's like a very twisted sense of humor.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how you felt about the way that humor is employed here, because it's throughout. Like even when things go crazy, Rose Glass still found moments to really sort of bring that into this. Does that tonal balance work for you?
For me, it completely works. Kristen Stewart, we are so gifted living the age of Kristen Stewart at her zenith as a performer, or really coming into her zenith as a performer. I truly don't even think we've seen the best of her yet. I think directors finally know how to work with her exact toolkit. And I think there is such an intensity and an anxiety to Kristen Stewart on screen. And, you know, the most raw form of that we have is Bella Swan, where it is just so sincere and radiating off the screen that you almost have to like laugh to break your own discomfort level with how true and real it is.
Yeah.
And now, though, we're at a point where I think she can play with that intensity and anxiety, and so can we in her performance. And we can find the humor in it that is intentional, like a shared vernacular between her and the audience, where like, no, Kristen Stewart knows exactly what she's doing. Rose Glass knows exactly how to direct her in this. And so when you have those tense moments on a call, like it's in the trailer, like when Ed Harris asks her, he's like, are you really going to do this? Like, are you really going to betray me? And there's this pregnant pause before she goes like, yep. And in the trailer, it kind of moves a little too fast. In the trailer, you watch it, you're like, oh no, what's going to happen? In the audience, that played like a laugh line in the theater that I was in, and not in a bad way. We were just all in on the joke of Yep, like everybody clap. Only this actor, only this line reading, only her here and now, right like this. And so that was, to me, the most exciting thing about the humor aspect of this movie was how much the tension in the tones played well together, because Rose Glass also is an incredible talent for blending strange tones.
Yeah. I also just want to quickly point out that Rose Glass actually co-wrote the script with Veronica Tofilska. So this was a collaborative effort in the script writing. But I'm glad you pointed out, Jordan, the sort of communal aspect, because in my theater, this does feel like the type of movie you want to go see with a nice crowd. This feels like a midnight show, like 20 years from now, they'll be showing it at midnight at any schlock fest type of film festival. Like that's what this movie feels like to a T.
And also like with the humor of it, the themes in the movie, like the things that they focus on, are inherently funny, you know, like bodybuilding specifically, you know, a farcical context is very funny, especially like looking at women's bodybuilding and looking at the way Katie O'Brien's character trains and poses in the mirror and oils up. Like it's inherently funny, and the New Mexico setting of it allows for more humor. You know, where it's, you know, Dave Franco's haircut, or like you said, Ed Harris's terrible wig, or the gun club that they're at.
That
like,
has a bar and grill.
Exactly.
And I think it's called Louville.
Yes, Louville.
Louville. Named for the man himself. Yes.
Like, it's funny. There's like inherent elements of humor baked into the movie where like, even if they're not cracking jokes all the time, I laughed every time Dave Franco's character was on screen. Yeah, you know, he's doing heinous things in this movie, but I looked at him with his like stupid mullet rat tail situation.
And the porn stash.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Like I was like, you're just a funny guy.
Yeah.
you know, and I was laughing. I was laughing all the way throughout. Great hair in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, Anna Baryshnikov, like yes. everything she does, much like her role in the show Dickinson, like she just sort of has a command of her strangeness on the screen in like a very conventionally pretty packaging, but isn't afraid to be weird. And so she's hilarious in this.
Yeah. She plays Daisy, who basically like pines after Lou, but Lou's clearly not interested, but she becomes kind of integral to all of the way that everything unfolds in the third act. And whew, man.
Yeah.
I really like the way her character progressed throughout the movie, where she started as kind of like a comedic foil. And then in the third act becomes very important in a way that's kind of like connects to the themes to the movie at large, where it's like this person who you might have written off.
Yeah.
Oh, surely she can't be, you know, impactful. Surely she can't make a difference. Ends up being kind of the crux for the events in the back half of the movie.
Yeah. And I mean, I do want to ask you, we won't get into spoilers or sort of how everything unfolds, but third acts are hard to pull off, you know, especially I think in films where things can easily just devolve into nonstop violence. And you could argue that this film does to some extent do that. But do you feel as though it sticks the landing? Because like it gets even weirder and there are like very surrealistic qualities to the way this unfolds.
I think like my one thing about the ending is that it didn't stick fully for me. The movie kind of lays these stones, you know, where you're wondering, where is this going to go? What is going to be the end point? I don't know. Like the fantastical elements for me did not particularly land. And I think that's my one flaw with the movie. I do think it like took me out of it a little bit, where I had to remember, I think at certain points, oh, right, I'm watching a movie, which is not my favorite feeling.
Yeah. Jordan, how about you?
The ending very much worked for me. I really loved the way that it just sort of like shoots into the moon at a certain point. I kind of always hope a movie's going to do the most. I hope it's always going to, even if honestly, if it feels tacked on, I'm like, do the craziest thing you can think of. Like this movie is so grounded and it's so like depressing in its reality at points, but it always still feels fun and moves fast. Rose Glass, because she is also the helmer of this, I was like, where are we going to Rose Glass it up a little bit more in this movie, having watched Saint Maud? And what she did so well in that movie is like put you in this sort of like unreliable narrator mind of our protagonist in Morfydd Clark. And you start like, are these unreal and fantastic things that are happening to her in the movie, are they a product of her imagination? Or are we truly watching someone sort of transcend in this religious way? And you're not sure because she's so sure. The protagonist is so sure. But you're like, but it can't be real. It can't be happening. And so when that started creeping into this, I was like, yeah, that's the Rose Glass of it all. And she has such an interesting approach to, in these two movies, I think, making stories about desire and it manifesting in the most intense or messed up, unexpected ways that, like, I will watch Rose Glass make left of center movies about unbridled human desire and the lengths that it will take you to and the things that it can make your mind do and see forever.
Yeah.
So I was very happy to see elements of that escalation also present in Love Lies Bleeding.
Ooh, yeah. Desire is such a great word because when you think about the fact that Jackie has these competing desires of like wanting to be this ultimate bodybuilder and then also wanting to love Lou and for Lou to like join her and go to Vegas with her, because Lou has like never left her town.
This town.
Yeah.
she says at one point, like, I've never been anywhere else. It's like, okay, woo, Lou, okay. Yeah. You understand her character a little bit more from that, but then you also understand Jackie's desire and how the bodybuilding, comparing that and how like obsessive you have to be to some extent to be a bodybuilder. I mean, any athlete, but like especially a bodybuilder. There's like an obsessive mode that comes with that in the same way that this love is obsessive and unhealthy in some ways. And I just found it, again, tactile and also campy and weird. It was just, I had a really good time.
Yeah. I mean, Ed Harris's character with a wig down to his waist lives in a Shangri-La in the middle of this like nothing place.
Yes.
Like, you see him in his home and it looks like kind of weirdly opulent. And then you see like wide shots of it. You see like a criminal kingpin in this area. And just like Kristen Stewart finally runs into it, we get like more of a sense of it. You're like, is this like a weird tacky place in the Hollywood Hills with like a verdant garden of large leaved flora and like pillars in the entryway? So like you know, the word pulp has been brought up. Mm. You get such a sense without having it being explained to you of who these people are and what mm-hmm. their like aspirations are within this very like drab setting.
Absolutely.
I mean, even like I think about like Kristen Stewart's apartment and how it's called like Mikasa apartments, yeah. You know, and they would like show the outside, the exterior. And every time I saw it, one, it would make me laugh, but also it was so distinct of like telling me a lot about her character, her situation, and the town that they're in. That's perfect to me.
I even love the little sort of motif of her trying to quit smoking and listening to these motivational tapes. And how like they plant that seed early on, and then later on there's like a line that happens where it's just like kind of perfect the way you can see that even though all of this turmoil is happening around her, she's still also like trying to be mindful of quitting smoking. And I'm just like, my goodness. It's like, it's pretty great.
And shouts out to Jenna Malone. Few actors can do more with a smaller amount of screen time to Jenna Malone, who plays her sister, Beth, in this movie.
Yes.
What a role.
Yeah. She really goes for it in some, even when she's laying there still and wordless, Jenna Malone, always a presence.
The character actors in this film are character acting in the best way possible.
Yeah.
Well, obviously we really enjoyed Love Lies Bleeding, and you should definitely let us know what you think about it once you've had a chance to check it out. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/BCHH. And up next, we're going to talk about what's making us happy this week.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries Black Twitter, A People's History from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Directed by Prentice Penny, executive producer of Insecure, Black Twitter, A People's History, tells the story of how Black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History, is now streaming on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how her team makes an impact.
We always do what we like to think of as actionable science. So the work that we do makes its way to things like nutrition and physical activity guidelines for cancer.org, where millions of people come each year to learn about how they can better prevent cancer.
To learn more, go to cancer.org.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at betterhelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
And now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy. Jordan, let's start with you.
I feel like if I didn't say this, I would be being disingenuous. What's making me happy is Love is Blind.
Yes.
Season 6. This is truly the first reality show since early seasons of Real Housewives of New York that I have followed. Mm. And when I say followed, I mean starting this season. I watched the Swedish season, the first Swedish season that really came into the consciousnesses of people a short time ago, and my wife is Swedish, so that was the hook point in. And obviously, once you get into or start watching any reality franchise that has become like an international spinoff, your entire life becomes that franchise because there's a season that comes out every new quarter. Yes. And so now Love is Blind America is on. I think it's season 6.
Yes.
And I am in these people's lives. I am in their experiment drama. And I find that reality TV is difficult for me still because I don't like it when people fight with each other. I'm fine with it in fiction. But like when I watch people hurting each other's feelings on reality television, I'm like, I don't want to watch this. This is not a sport. I do not want to cheer these people on. It makes me sad.
Oh, Jordan, you're such a much better person than I am.
Apparently, Love is Blind is a formula that works for me. I feel like this is like a confessional. I feel like I'm in confessional right now. Like me being like, I can't sit here and tell you that Dune Part 2 is the only thing that's making me happy. Love is Blind.
Well, I'm so glad to welcome you into the Love is Blind fold.
Yeah, I'm here.
So that is Love is Blind season 6, the American version. It is streaming on Netflix. And I should also note that you can check out a whole episode where we talk about season 6 on PCHH that dropped earlier this week. So go check that out if you are also, like myself and Jordan, very into this entire season. Rihanna, what is making you happy this week?
I love a little online game. You know, like I'm not like a gamer, but I do enjoy like my little website games. Yeah. And there's this website, it's called moviegrid.io, which is a really lovely game that kind of flexes like the part of your brain that's like, I know actors in things and how they, you know, interact with one another. Mm. And basically how it works is that like it's a very simple website that has like a 3x3 grid. And there's three, you know, actors or directors in it. You know, it could be like Jake Gyllenhaal, Timothy Chalamet, you know, Saoirse Ronan, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the top would be like directed by so-and-so, $100 million movie, Oscar-winning performance. And basically, you know, you have to rack your brain to think, okay, what Jake Gyllenhaal movie made over $100 million at the box office? And you kind of put it in every grid in this. Mm. And it's very fun. Me and my roommates send each other our movie grids every day. You get more points if you go for a more obscure movie. There's a TV one. There's a classic ones if you're like really up on like Barbara Stanwyck and Robert Redford movies.
Ooh, yes. That sounds like right up my alley.
So if you're like into the online game world and you play like Connections and Wordle and stuff like that, like this is very much up that alley, and I recommend it. moviegrid.io. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. That is moviegrid.io. So what is making me happy is the return of Girls 5 Eva.
Yes.
Season 3 has just dropped on Netflix. It moved from Peacock to Netflix for this season. And when I tell you that this show is like still firing on all cylinders, 3 seasons in, it absolutely is. If you're not familiar with it, it stars Sarah Bareilles, Renee Elise Goldsberry, Busy Phillips, and Paula Pell. They play a former late 90s, early aughts girl group who are reunited. And, you know, the first 2 seasons was all about them actually reuniting and trying to get together and like make this whole thing work some 20 odd years later. And this season, they are all on tour. Each episode finds them in like a new part of the country, from Fort Worth to Orlando to Cleveland. It's just delightful. The music is great. The performances are great. Renee Elise Goldsberry continues to be sort of like the Jenna Mulroney of Girls 5 Eva. Like,
yes.
And I love every time she's on screen. So yeah, that's Girls 5 Eva. It's streaming on Netflix, season 3. You should just definitely check it out. It's a great binge. I love it so much. And that's what's making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations, you should definitely sign up for our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our show. Jordan Cruciola, Rihanna Cruz, thank you so much for being here. This was, as always, a joy and a pleasure.
It was so pleasant. Thank you.
Kristen Stewart 5 Eva, you guys.
Yes.
Yes, bring it all together. This episode was produced by Skylar Swenson and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Kamin provides our theme music. Thanks so much for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all next week.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Viore, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to viore.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Learning. IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little breaks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.